Well, the question was raised last time, which people do not have to go up to the temple on the three holidays of the year, okay? And I mentioned a couple last time, but I didn't have the full list in front of me. But for your own interest, the list is as follows. A person who is deaf, a person who is dumb, that means he can't speak, a person who is a shota means a person that's a fool. A fool means a person whose intelligence is severely impaired. The test is if you give him something of value and he throws it away, and something that's not of value, he keeps. In other words, he's seriously impaired intellectually. Cotton means a youngster, anyone under 13. A person who's blind, a person who is crippled, a person who is unclean, and a person who is uncircumcised, and also one who is old or sick or weak and cannot walk a certain distance by foot. They can't walk by foot. A specific amount of distance from the higher up from the entrance of the mount to the place where they had to bring the carbon in the temple itself, the Azara it's called. Okay, so those people are all exempt from going to Jerusalem, because the going to Jerusalem is not just a visit to the city. It means when you go to Jerusalem, you have to bring a sacrifice, and these 10 people are excluded. Okay, any questions?
Yes, sir, I have a question.
Go ahead.
You said the uncircumcised.
Right.
Amplify that, if you can.
Uncircumcised means simply a Jew that never received the act of circumcision where the foreskin was removed from his male organ. That's the definition of uncircumcised. Okay?
Okay, that would not refer to a non-Jew or anyone that was considered unclean then.
No, but no, that's right. Because anyone who's unclean would not be able to go also.
All right, what is an unclean person?
Oh, an unclean person is a person who came in contact with either a dead person or with a certain object that came in contact with them. I mean, I'm just giving you briefly what it is, but it's a little complex. I mean, I can't do that in one sentence. I'm just telling you, it's basically it has to do with someone who came in contact with the dead. But there are more than one ways of coming in contact with the dead. It's a whole system. So that would be unclean.
Okay, but we read in the prophets that during the age of the Mashiach, all mankind will have to come.
That's correct. But a person who is not Jewish is never unclean. That's the principle of Torah. That was a Gentile, and a person who is not a Jew is never unclean. Only a Jew could be unclean. Okay, so that shows you. By the way, that supports what I told you last time. I said unclean is not a bad thing. The term unclean is terrible. It has nothing to do with being clean, really. All it means is a certain halachic state in which one is prohibited to enter into the temple area. And that has to do with contact with dead. There are other things also that make a person unclean, but the other uncleannesses are easier to remove. The one that has to do with death is more complicated. It has to do with the ashes of the red heifer, as you know. But the point I'm making is that being unclean is not considered a bad thing. It's not like a taboo kind of thing. It has nothing to do with it. And that's why you see that only a Jew actually could be unclean. A person who's not Jewish cannot be unclean. So B'nai Noach do not have to worry about the problem of the red heifer or going into the temple, or going onto the temple area without being unclean. Of course, it does not. The state that only exists in one who is bound by the 613, not by one who is bound by the 7. Okay?
Okay, now I guess I've got us. And you
okay,
can...
that's why I must always emphasize and re-emphasize that translations are terrible because they have certain connotations that conjure up in your mind certain ideas that you associate to them, but in halacha it just doesn't work that way. I mean, the English language that we have is not a halachic language, so, you know, they try to get as close to it as they can, and usually it comes out with something that you start associating to, and it's completely distorted. So I always have to caution you. You got to be careful. A lot of times you read a verse or something in Isaiah, whatever, it doesn't make any sense. There's nothing wrong with you. It's probably the translation is not good, and you're misconstruing it because of that. Okay. Now let's get back to our main subject. The main topic which we were doing was the holidays, if I'm not mistaken. We had explained the three major sections in the Torah that deal with the area of the holidays, and why they're broken up into those three sections, and what each section has to do with the topics of each section. So, based upon that, I know we've had a bit of a break, but if you remember, based upon that, which area would you say is the one that we should go into if you want to study about the holidays? Okay? Anybody want to jump for that one, or you want me to do it?
All right. After the last class, and I don't remember, you know, we've slept two or three times since then, but we were talking about the holidays, and you gave pretty good description of what the Jews did in relation to the specific holidays.
Okay, in other words, I showed you there's basically three areas.
Right.
The holidays covers three topics.
Right.
Right?
Yes, sir.
The one topic was the sacrifices. That's in Numbers. One topic was the sacrifices, that's the Numbers. The second topic was about going to Jerusalem, and that only includes three holidays, that's in Deuteronomy. And the other topic deals with the prohibitions or the abstention from work on the holidays, and that is in Leviticus. Okay? So, understandably, based upon that, if you really want to go to the most basic thing about the holidays, of the three, it would have to be Leviticus. You see, Leviticus is the most basic, because Numbers deals with the sacrifices in the temple, so that's limited. And again, in Deuteronomy, you're dealing with the going up to Jerusalem, which only actually involves three holidays and only when you have the temple. So the most universal and the most informative in terms of the scope of it is definitely Leviticus. So that's where we must start if you want to analyze the holidays. Okay? And actually it comes first in the Bible. So let's take a look. It's in Leviticus. Hold on a second, let me just find it. It's in Leviticus 23. Okay, that's where it starts. Now, let's take a look. We have to read through these verses. Two verses. Okay, first it says, verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel, and you shall say to them, the holidays of God, which you shall call a holy calling, these are my holidays. Is that more or less the way your translation is? I'm just translating it from the Hebrew myself. Okay, then you have the next verse. Next verse is, 6 days you shall do work, and on the seventh day, it is a day of rest, a holy calling, no work shall be done. It is a Sabbath unto God in all your dwelling places. Okay? Now, if you take a look at verse 2, there's something important in verse 2, extremely important. And if you take a look at verse 2 and verse 3, you should come up with a problem, a question that you should raise, an important question. All right? Let's take a look at verse 2. And again, I don't know which translation you use. If you want me to use a certain translation, I can, but you'd have to tell me which one so we could be consistent. The one I have in front of me is the Jerusalem Bible. I don't know if that's the one that you're using. It's pretty good, I found, but again, not perfect.
All right. Most of us have the King James, that basic King James. I have the Jerusalem Bible here.
Oh, you got the basic King James?
Yes.
And I really should get a hold of a copy of that, actually.
All right. You know, you have that one we sent you. You remember that Scofield Reference Bible?
I don't know if I ever got that one. I think I got the...
Yeah, you did, because you read from it. It's got a leather cover.
Do I have a Bible from David with a leather cover? Oh, yeah. I don't, you know, I think there was a problem. I think it never came, that one. I think I remember we discussed this.
Yeah, I think we sent you two, and one of them got lost, and I think you got the other one. If not, we'll give you another one when... We'll give you another one. We'll tie that one to you when you come.
Oh, 1 second. Martha, she's got one. Oh, this one? No, this is my own. This is not the same one.
Okay.
I have, this is a the Masoretic Text, the old Masoretic Text.
No.
Jewish Publication Society.
No.
No. All right, well, anyway.
Well, we'll struggle through.
No, not the New Testament, no. Okay. So, at any rate, do you people have that 23:2-3?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, if you want, you can read me your translation. But in 2, if you translate it directly from the Hebrew, it comes out like this. Speak to the children of Israel, and you should say to them, the festivals of God, which you shall call them a holy calling, these are my festivals. Is that more or less the way you have it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's called a holy convocation.
Okay.
These are my feasts.
Okay. But does it say, after it says, if you just read to me the first half of that sentence over there. Speak to the children of Israel and you should say to them. After that, what is it?
All right. Speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them concerning the feast of the Lord.
The feast of the Lord?
Yes. Which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocations, okay. Even these are my feasts.
Okay. Well, feast is a funny kind of a word, because really the word noed does not mean a feast. It means a set time. That's what it means. You find it throughout the prophets also. La moed. You have it in the beginning of, the reading we just did in Genesis, where the angel will say to Sarah, I will return to you, La Moed. Moed means at a specific interval, time interval. It meant the following year. Same time, next year. So Moed means a specific designated time. So what it means literally is not the feasts of God, but the designated times of God. Now, the important thing is the next verse, the next part of the verse, where it says, where you shall call them a holy calling. Now, what does it mean when it says, you shall call them a holy calling? Doesn't that strike you as strange? What do you mean? What do we have to do? What does that mean? That we're supposed to get up in the morning and call out and say, well, this is a holy day, this is a holy time? I mean, what does it mean? We have to understand over here what the written law that God gave Moses means. What does it mean? It has to have some kind of a meaning. So, actually, The oral interpretation, and this is of no one disagrees with this. This is agreed upon universally. Explains it to mean that the ones that establish the holidays are really the Sanhedrin. Why? Because they establish the new moon. So when they establish a new moon, it is they that establish the date that it's going to occur on. Because, for instance, if you take a look at 5. It says the first month on the 14th day of the month. So therefore, when the Beis Din, when the Sanhedrin establishes that day as the first day of the month, they are in effect establishing the holiday. They are, by virtue of doing that, they are they're calling it. Calling means that you shall call it means that you, the people of Israel, via the Sanhedrin, are going to establish my holidays. How do you establish the holidays? By establishing the months. When you establish, when you say it's the beginning of the month, then of course the 14th is going to be according to that count. So therefore, the holidays are really established by the Sanhedrin. Now, it's an interesting thing. But even if they, by the way, you know, there was the question you should ask me now is, everyone should ask this question, it's a pretty open question. If that's the case, then we shouldn't have any holidays today, because we don't have any more Sanhedrin, and they can't establish the month. So how do we have holidays? Okay? Anybody want to tackle that one?
All right. When they said when the Sanhedrin establish the holidays, these become part of Halakha, and the just because the Sanhedrin's not in power or not seated at this time, the holidays continue.
Yeah, but what I meant before when I said when the Sanhedrin established the holiday, they established it by establishing the month. In other words, every month the Sanhedrin would convene, and there would be witnesses that would come before them and would say that we saw the beginning of the moon. And then they would work according to two systems. They would work according to astronomy and according to testimony. Now, they studied the astronomy, and they knew when the moon could be seen. But it could not be established according to Halacha unless the two witnesses actually came to court and said that we saw the moon on such and such a day. And then the Sanhedrin would say, well, then it's the first of the month. Because the first of the month was the first glimpse of the moon. Okay? The smallest, tiniest amount. Because, you know, the moon waxes and wanes. So after the waning period, it starts again. And the moment they would see that first little spot of the moon, then that would be the first day of the month. So they worked with two systems, astronomy also, because they would know that when it could be seen, when it couldn't be seen. If witnesses were liars, they wouldn't accept them. But the question is, of course, today we don't have any Sanhedrin. So how do we establish each month? We shouldn't have any months anymore. That's really the question. Since the Torah over here says you must call them, how do you call them? By establishing the month. You establish the date. But today we don't have any more Sanhedrin to establish the month. So this is a major question. How do we have holidays in our day and age? Okay? The answer is there are two interpretations to this one. One interpretation is Maimonides, and the other one is Nachmanides. What happened was, historically, according to everyone, what happened was that before the Sanhedrin closed, in other words, before the end of the Sanhedrin, what they did was they established a calendar. Now, this calendar was established, I mentioned this on that tape, that the rabbis of the Talmud were always interested in every area of knowledge, because it's a commandment. It's a virtuous thing to study all areas of knowledge, astronomy, physics, every area of knowledge. So the rabbis of the Talmud knew astronomy. They used to have, as a matter of fact, they oftentimes had conversations with the Greeks about different astronomical problems in astronomy, because they were interested in all knowledge. The prophets always say, look, prophets say, raise your eyes to the heavens and see who has created these. And King David says, how great are thy works of God. You made them all with wisdom. And in our prayers, we always mention in the morning and the evening, the God's wisdom as expressed in the universe. And actually, the celebration of the first day of the month, the concept, the idea of celebrating the first day of the month, is really the celebration of God's creation in terms of the celestial beings, in other words, the entire universe. And we have a blessing that we recite when the moon becomes more visible that has to do with that God created the moon, really. Is the reason why we use the moon is because you don't have to be a great astronomer to see that there's a system when you just take a look at the moon. You see it waxes and wanes. So even a simple person can see that there's some kind of order going on here. You may not understand it astronomically, but even a plain person, it's obvious that there's some kind of system that's going on in the heavens. So this is used, the moon is used, as an object that shows man that God runs the universe with wisdom and with order and with harmony. There's harmony in the universe. So the holiday of the first day of the month is really the celebration of God's creation of the universe and the harmony that he created in the universe. That's the concept of the, we call that Rosh Chodesh. But getting back to the problem that I mentioned before, how do we have this anymore today when there is no Sanhedrin? So there are two answers, Nachmanides and Maimonides, but it's based on one fact. The fact is that before the close of the Sanhedrin, what they did was they knew the astronomy and they had studied the astronomy from the Greeks, and they simply made a calendar that would work for centuries and centuries. And this was done, hundreds of years ago, and it still works today. We still use that same calendar that was authenticated by the last of the ones who were considered the best in the Sanhedrin, which is qualified to actually create the holiday of the first day of the month. So that's historically the way it worked. The argument between Maimonides and Nachmanides is a theoretical one. According to Nachmanides, by doing that, they were able to create through the calendar. What they did was they sanctified the first day of the month until the time of the resurrection of the third temple, which means, of course, that during our period that we're in now. That's Nachmanides' view. Maimonides' view is different. Maimonides' view is that it only had to be done through the Sanhedrin when there was a temple. But in the absence of a temple, it goes by the calendar. So either way, according to Nachmanides, it was the last people who actually sanctified all the months in the future for hundreds and hundreds of years until the resurrection of the third temple. According to Maimonides, it's not so. According to Maimonides, it happens according to the calendar when there is no temple, and when there is a temple, then only it must be done by two witnesses in front of the Sanhedrin. So, at any rate, according to either view, there's no question about the fact that we have holidays, because otherwise the Hillel, his name was Hillel, not the famous Hillel, what he did was, when he set up the calendar, he did set it up. We know in fact that they did set it up for the time when there wouldn't be any more qualified Sanhedrin to actually create the sanctify the first day of the month. The theoretics is an argument between Maimonides and Nachmanides, but the actuality of it was not questioned. I mean, there's no one that maintains that we don't have any holidays today. Okay, so getting on with that. The important point over here in this verse, getting back to the central idea in the verse, is you see something interesting over here, that God says to Moses, to tell the people of Israel, that they must call these days holy days. Okay, set days for designated towards a certain relationship with God. Okay, because it says these are the set times of God. You have feasts of God. Okay, it really means a set time that's related to God. So here we have a very interesting concept. What is the concept? The concept is that the holidays cannot come about without Israel. Israel is the one that must create these holidays. Now, there is a contradistinction between that and one other kind of holiday. What holiday is that? That's the Sabbath. Sabbath does not come about through the Sanhedrin, through the Beis Din. The Beis Din does not have to say today is Sabbath or tomorrow is Sabbath. They don't have to establish Sabbath. What they establish is only the holidays. Sabbath is automatic. Beis Din has nothing to do with it. Okay? And that's why if you take a look at verse 3, it says, 6 days you shall do work, and on the seventh day it is a Sabbath, you shall not do any work. Over there it doesn't say that you have to create it. You shall call the Sabbath a Sabbath. It only says it in verse 2 with regard to the festivals, not in verse 3. So now, and also in the prayers that we have, the prayers, of course, are all based upon the concepts of the Torah. They all reflect the ideas of the Torah. So in the prayers that we have, there's a difference between the prayer we say on Sabbath and between the prayer that we say on the holidays. On Sabbath, we say, when we conclude the prayer, we say, "You are blessed, O God, who sanctifies the Sabbath." That's it. On the holidays, we say, "Blessed art thou, O God, who sanctifies Israel and the holidays." Why don't we just say, "Blessed art thou, O God, who sanctifies the holidays," just like we say, "Blessed art thou, O God, who sanctifies Sabbath"? The reason is, as we have explained, when you take a look at the verse, you see clearly that there is a difference. With regard to Sabbath, God makes Sabbath holy. Man has nothing to do with it. With regard to the holidays, however, God says, "You shall call them holidays," which means to say that Israel has to sanctify the holidays. If Israel doesn't sanctify it, there is no holiday. So therefore, the conclusion of the blessing is, "Blessed art thou, O God, who sanctifies Israel and the holidays." Because you must have Israel first. If God did not give Israel the right to do it, there would be no holidays. I want you to understand, when the Sanhedrin does it, they're really doing it on behalf of all of Israel. Sometimes the Sanhedrin acts as a private entity. Sometimes it acts as an entity which represents all of Israel. And in Halacha, you have these two different functions of the Sanhedrin. Over here, the Sanhedrin, or the Beis Din, is functioning as a representation of the entire nation of Israel. So this is the most basic concept about holidays, that the sanctity of the holiday must be produced by Israel. It's not automatic, whereas the sanctity of Sabbath is automatic. Okay? This distinction is crucial for understanding the concept of a holiday. Without this, you're missing the essential feature of a holiday. Okay. Why is this so significant? Why is this point so significant? This point is significant because the Torah really is telling man that there are two types of sanctity. There's a sanctity which is automatic, which God creates. That's the sanctity of the Sabbath. Then there's a sanctity which man must produce, and that is the holidays. If man doesn't produce it, if man doesn't make that movement towards God to produce the holiday, then there's no holiday. Then it just doesn't exist. Over here, in the case of the holidays, man has to produce it. If man shows no interest, if man doesn't establish it, then there is no, it does not exist. Okay, that's the reason why holidays have to be produced by man. Sabbath, on the other hand, cannot and must not be produced by man. It's interesting. Sabbath is produced by God. Man has played no role in creating the sanctity and the holiness of the Sabbath. Okay. Why is this so is a good question. Why this is so? We'll try to get into it a little more, to elaborate a little more on these two concepts. But the two concepts are extremely important. Now, the question that is to be raised is, when you take a look at verse 2 and verse 3, okay, there is a problem here, all right? Take a look, do even more. Take a look at verse 2, verse 3, and the beginning of verse 4, all right? And you'll see immediately what the problem is, based upon the way not only based upon our explanation, even without our explanation, the difficulty arises. If you take a look at these three verses, there's something that is strange. I would say especially the way we explained it. Okay?
Rabbi?
Yeah.
We got to turn the tape.
Okay, sure.
I don't know if you intend to deal with this or not. I would like to... look at the idea of the Sabbath here. You talked about the the calendar system, and then the we have the astrological signs and so forth.
Right.
And see, I see in this the repetitiveness through the 23rd chapter that you have the moon is the key, but the Sabbaths are also the keys. Now, you said there were some problems here with verses 2, 3, and I think you said verse 4, correct? But see, I see the Sabbath as being the key to tell when these feasts are going to take place.
Well, actually, you see, when the Sabbath, the Sabbath really doesn't have anything to do with the festivals. As you probably know, just from observing superficially even, when these holidays are celebrated, they are celebrated almost any day during the week. And Sabbath has plays no role in establishing these holidays. The holidays are based upon the calendar. Sabbath is simply based upon the seventh day. You have 6 days, and the seventh day is Sabbath. So the holidays can fall on Sabbath, before Sabbath, after Sabbath, middle of the week, any time. So really, the Sabbath does not play any role in determining when the holidays are going to fall. All right, on what days they're going to fall. Now, the difficulty with these verses 2, 3, and 4, and the difficulty with the whole chapter is that Sabbath shouldn't be there. That's the question. The question is, why is Sabbath there? In other words, if you have verse 2, which is speaking to the children of Israel and tell them that these are the festivals of God, which they shall call festivals, there's no reason for verse 3. Verse 3 is completely inappropriate. It's out of place. It doesn't belong there. The Sabbath is mentioned in Exodus. The Sabbath is mentioned in a few places. It does not belong with the festivals. Of course, the Sabbath is not a festival. As a matter of fact, as I've explained, the Sabbath has nothing to do with man. Man does not create the Sabbath. The Sabbath is already in existence from the time of creation. And it's not something that the Sanhedrin or the Beis Din can change or establish. They do nothing about it. So it really doesn't even belong here. That's the major question. What is the Sabbath doing in this entire chapter? It has no business being there. Okay? Now, I believe the reason is as follows. And I think it's an important thing. As you know, as we've always stressed and emphasized, and the scholars of the Talmud, Maimonides, everybody emphasizes, that underlying the whole Torah is one thing, the removal and denial of idolatry. And wherever you look, it's like almost like water in the earth. As you dig, you're always going to hit that water. The same thing is true in the structures of the law. Now, over here as well, the same thing is true. If you look into it with a little depth of understanding, the idea, the concept of Sabbath is an interesting one. Sabbath, what is Sabbath? Sabbath is simply a day in which we recognize that God created the universe, basically, because there were six stages of creation, and I don't like to use the word days, because days, a person thinks of a 24-hour day literally, but the scholars of the Talmud really considered it stages, as Maimonides says. He says that, because the Talmud asks, how could you have a first day? There was no, the sun was not in the proper position yet at that time. There was no day. So the Talmud says, it doesn't mean day. It means like when a person plants something, he says, well, the first day I planted, the next day the seed germinated, the next day it sprouted, and the next day it blossomed, it burst forth, and then the fourth day it blossomed. So it really means stages of creation. Now, there were these six stages, and then on the Sabbath was a harmonious state, like we have the universe now. It's a harmony that exists throughout the universe. So the harmonious state was reached on the Sabbath. So when we speak about celebrating the Sabbath, what we're really doing is that we are, through our actions and through our understanding, we are saying that there is a creator of the universe. That's basically what we're saying. Nothing more, essentially. Okay? Now, the idea of a creator of the universe is a totally objective kind of a thing. What I mean to say by that is, it does not mean that the the idea of a created universe is saying that we believe in God because He is the Creator, because that is the reality of it, not because of anything He has to do with us, but simply because of the fact that He is the He is the Creator, and that is a reality. The reason why, in some ways, why do we believe in God? Not because God does anything for us, not because He has anything to do with us. We believe in God because that is a fact, just like a scientist believes in the physical universe, because that's a fact. Not because it has anything, it holds anything for him. He believes in physics not because it does anything for him. Maybe he's a physicist, he makes a living out of that, but that's a science thing. The reason why he believes in physics is because it exists, okay? The reason why we believe in God as the creator is not because of anything he does for us or anything, simply because that is the truth, that this universe came about through an act of creation, and the source of that act of creation is God. So it's a concept which has nothing to do with us personally. It is not a personalized concept. It's a reality. That's the concept of Sabbath, okay? Now, the holidays are totally different than that. The themes of the holidays have to do with God's relationship to the people. For instance, let's take the first holiday. It says in the first month, so what is the holiday? It's Passover. Now, why Passover? That's because God took the people out of Egypt, okay? That's a personal reason. Every one of the holidays is because of a personal relationship between God and man. The going out of Egypt. The holiday that's at the end of the 7 weeks is also because of the giving of the Torah at Sinai. The holiday that has to do with the beginning of the year, Day of Judgment, repentance, Yom Kippur, repentance. Then you have Sukkot, which is dwelling in the booths, because God made those booths for the children of Israel when they left Egypt. Yes. Who is it?
Howard.
I can't talk to you now, Howard. Excuse me. Howard.
I have another job.
Okay, do it just quick, okay? Alright, sorry about that. So, the holidays, on the other hand, are very personal. Holidays, on the other hand, are very personal. So you have two different types of situations. You have a situation that is non-personal, that is recognition of God because He exists, not because of anything He did for man. And then you have the recognition of God through certain things, certain events that occurred in the past that are important to relive and to recount because they indicate the relationship between this God of the universe and man. Okay? Now, that's why the two are sort of in opposition to each other. And on the one, you're dealing not with the personal, but with the reality of the creator. And on the second, you're dealing with the personal. Now, the reason why the Torah, why the Bible starts off with Sabbath is for a very simple reason. Because if the Torah would have omitted the Sabbath, but it would have started off right away. These are the holidays which you shall call holy. You shall sanctify. So then, man would be in relationship to God in a totally egocentric way, and there would even be the idolatrous mind is totally egocentric. The idolater is only interested in one thing. He's interested in his own salvation. There's no reality there. Why does he believe? He's going to be saved. He's going to have some salvation. He's going to be protected. The idolater does not really see any kind of reality. To him, his religion is tailor-made for one purpose: to save him, to protect him, to give him eternal life. Everything for him. It's an egocentric kind of religion. The Torah is just the opposite. The Torah is reality-centered. That's why the Torah begins, before you get involved with the holidays, which is God's relationship with you, and because of that, it's something which you must enact. That's all very nice, all very beautiful. You have to show that you're interested in creating the holiday. You have to make the first move towards God when it comes to the holiday. That's all very nice, but you must remember one thing. Sabbath is first. First, you must have the idea of the objective creator of the universe.
Rabbi?
Yes.
This is Charles McKeon.
Yes, Charles.
I've got a question here, if
sure.
I may. Are you saying to me that all the characters of the Bible basically did what they did because they believed that it was just right, or that God had done something for them, or that, in other words, they didn't do this because God had done something for them? Am I making that
clear? That's correct.
Clear? In other words, with all that God did for the children of Israel, you don't think there was a little bit of thing there of them doing what God requested because of what he had done for them?
Oh, certainly. There's no question about that. But that is correct. That is the concept of holidays. The concept of holidays is recognition of what God did for the people. That's correct. There are two. Both are true. In other words, the idea of a holiday is that it is a recounting of what God's special relationship with the people, what God does for man. You see, what God can do for man. It teaches us the wonderful relationship on a personal level between God and man. That's the holidays. But Sabbath, on the other hand, sets that off and places it into its proper perspective. It doesn't allow man to be egocentric, where his whole relationship with God is simply based upon what God has done for him. Then it would be an egocentric religion. And the Torah doesn't want that. The Torah wants the first thing that man should have is an objective sense of reality. And what is the holiday that is objective, which has nothing to do with man, with what God did for man? It's merely the fact that God is the creator and source of the entire universe. Okay? So that is the Sabbath. So what I'm saying is the reason why the Sabbath is mentioned first is to teach man that while it is fine for him, wonderful for him, to celebrate the days in which he recounts what God did for man, that's all true and all wonderful. But his first concept of God should not be based upon what God has done for him, but the fact that God exists in reality. That is the basis of his whole belief. As a matter of fact, the first commandment of the 613, Maimonides makes it very clear. What is the first commandment? To know that there exists as the source of the entire universe a being, non-material, who is the source of the entire universe that we observe, the entire creation. That is the very first of the 613 commandments. And, of course, that includes a Ben Noach as well. If Ben Noach doesn't have a concept of God, then there's no basis for keeping the seven laws. So this is not just for Ben Israel, it's for Ben Noach as well. So now that means that is simply an objective fact, just like the universe exists, there is a source for the universe that exists, that is beyond the physical universe. That source is not physical, and that source is God. That concept is the basis of the entire Torah. Now, that concept says if a person believes that idea, even though he doesn't believe that God relates to man, he has fulfilled at least the very first, the very basic, most basic fundamental idea in Judaism. And that's why I often mention that a person like Albert Einstein, who had no background whatsoever, because the German Jews were completely removed from Torah, no background whatsoever in Torah, but his concept of God, when he studied the universe, and he said from the harmony of the universe, you can see that there is a creator, there is a being that's the source of all of the entire universe. He fulfilled that commandment, even though he did not believe in a personal God, but that commandment he fulfilled. As a matter of fact, even the love of God is based upon appreciation of God's knowledge. He fulfilled that commandment as well. So you see, the Torah is an objective system. And the fact that God relates to us We are in appreciation of this. It's wonderful, and that's what the holidays are there for. But we must always remember that the basis of our religion is not simply because God did things for us. It's because he is in existence. He exists, okay? And that we attest to by the Sabbath. That is why the Sabbath is the fundamental principle. And the Torah says, before I give you the holidays, I want you to know this, that the Sabbath is everything. It's based on everything. If you don't start with Sabbath, if you start with holidays, you're in trouble, because then you're liable to become an egocentric religious individual, which is not the ideal of Torah. As a matter of fact, that becomes a dangerous idea. You see here again an interesting thing. The Torah wanted man to sanctify the holidays. It was important. Why? Because man has to show that he's reaching for God in the personal relationship. So when he creates the holiday, he makes the first move. But the only way he could do it is when God sanctions him to do it. See, if God didn't allow him to do it and he would do it on his own, that would be idolatry. That would be man working with this from his own emotions, which is pure idolatry. The only reason that we can create the holidays is because God gave this verse in the Torah, that you shall call these days holidays. You shall establish the dates.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I'm approaching this thing on the Sabbath again from a Ben Nock standpoint, looking at it. Isaiah, and I know you're familiar with the text, Isaiah 56, and thus saith the Lord, that's the Tetragrammaton, keep justice and do righteousness, for my salvation, that's understood as deliverance, not a soteriological thing as that you would think of it, as deliverance is near to come, and my righteousness to be revealed. So that indicates a future tense. Blessed is the man, and I believe that man there is Ish, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, Ish. That's any man that doeth this, and the son of man that layeth hold to it, that keepeth the Sabbath from polluting it, and keepeth his hand from doing any evil. And it would seem here that God is looking toward the future, that as we approach the Messianic era, that every person that has this idea that you're espousing of God would lay hold to the Sabbath in some way.
That's correct. That has to relate to the Sabbath. And you have it at the end of Isaiah, too.
Right. That's in Isaiah 66.
That's right. Where he says, in the month and the Sabbath.
Yes, from new moon to new moon. And
that's a new moon to new moon, Sabbath to Sabbath.
Right.
And the reason for that is precisely, as a matter of fact, the reason for the equation over there in Isaiah between the Sabbath and the new moon is because, as I've said before, the holiday of the new moon is the celebration of God's universe. So that's the same as the Sabbath. The only difference is that in one instance, God created it, and in the other instance, man creates it, when man establishes the new moon. So even the idea, even the concept of Sabbath was repeated again insofar as man is concerned. Because man has to create the holiday of the new moon, which is a recognition of the harmony that exists in nature, which is very similar, not precisely the same, but it certainly is in theme. It's close to the idea of the Sabbath. It means you're celebrating the universe and the creator of the universe. But the idea of God being the creator must be celebrated, first of all, initiated by God himself, and secondly, through man.
All right, the point that I would make, how does a Ben Noach, or Ish, any man, how does he keep from polluting the Sabbath? Now see, the rabbis tell us that the Ben Noach is not commanded to keep the Sabbath, only the seventh. Then if he keeps the Sabbath, he can't do it as does the Ben Israel. He has to abstain from the 39 works. Alright, how does the Ben Noach observe the Sabbath, and how does he keep from polluting it? And again, my emphasis here is that there should be the acknowledgement of the Sabbath.
No, that's correct. There's no question about it. The verse in Isaiah that you've mentioned, some want to say that it is not, where it says keeping the Sabbath from polluting it. So some want to say that it only refers to a Ben Israel. But the end of Isaiah, there's no question that it refers to everyone, because it says that all flesh shall come forth to appear before me in Isaiah 66. Isaiah 66:23. There's no question about it, because it says all flesh. But in the other verse, there are some that want to say that it means only the Ben Israel, because many times the Son of Man means is referring to Israel. So that's not really isn't Ashrei Enosh. Sometimes it refers to Israel, and he uses the term man. But there are cases like that. But the end of Isaiah, there's no question that it refers to everyone, Jew and non-Jew alike. You see clearly from Isaiah that that in terms of recognition of the Sabbath, there is no difference between the Jew and the non-Jew. There's no difference. And how does the non-Jew should demonstrate his recognition of Sabbath? That he comes to the comes to bow before God on the Sabbath. So the idea of the Sabbath existing for the Ben Noach in terms of his recognition of the Sabbath is the same as the Ben Israel. The only thing he cannot do is he cannot observe the Sabbath in terms of the refraining from the 39 forms of work. And I would like to go into exactly why that is so. Okay? Now, in order to understand why that's so, we really would have to take Maimonides in that area itself, where Maimonides discusses it. And I had in mind to go into this. My only question is, well, let's start it. We'll see how much we could do. I'll read to you the statement of Maimonides, and I think if we concentrate on what he says carefully, we will be able to understand why the Ben Noach cannot keep the Sabbath, because the question is a powerful one. Since you see that the recognition of the Sabbath is mandatory and it's a sign of the greatest perfection, and it's understandable because the Sabbath means that you're attesting to the fact that God created the universe. What's more important than that? So how could you exclude a Ben Noach from such a concept? It doesn't make any sense. That is a big problem. So certainly in terms of recognition of the Sabbath, there's no question about that, in that sense, that the Ben Noach must recognize the Sabbath. And that this is an important thing. It's his relationship with God. But why the prohibition? That is a nagging question. It's the only commandment basically that the Ben Noach can't fulfill, which is a commandment that's applicable in every day and age, not just in the time of the temple. Okay. Well, let's take a look at the way Maimonides formulates this prohibition, and it's important when you're studying a scholar like Maimonides to listen carefully to every word, because if you do, you'll be able to derive the principle. Now, this is what Maimonides says. He says that the non-Jew, the Ben Noach, is not permitted to rest even on a weekday. Okay, he's not permitted to rest even on a weekday. He says, if he makes that day for himself as a Sabbath, he is in serious violation. And then he goes on to say, and certainly if he made a holiday for himself, that certainly is a violation. So he can't keep Sabbath on, even if it's on a weekday when it's not the real day of Sabbath, even then he's not permitted to keep it. Certainly not on the Sabbath itself, and certainly if he just makes a holiday for himself, that certainly is a violation. Now he goes on to say like this, what is the general principle? The general principle is that the Ben Noach, who comes...
Define holiday.
Okay, holiday means a day that's different than every other work day, a day in which there's some kind of a celebration, something different about the day. You're saying this day is a special day, has some kind of special qualities, other than the usual day. It's something unusual about it. Whatever way you demonstrate that, if you would abstain from doing work on that day, that would be making it into a holiday, making it into a special day. Okay, So that is the that's what he means by creating a holiday.
All right, so all the American holidays where we shut down for 4th of July, all this other. See, we've talked about this before.
Right.
We're hitting it from another point.
Okay.
Now, Lawrence Ledford says, over here says, what if a man just wore out and he's tired and he needs to take a day off?
No, he's not making it into a special day. He's just tired. There's no prohibition from that.
Yeah, there's no prohibition against that, Lawrence. He's just tired. He can rest.
Resting is no problem, because when you're resting, you're just saying that you're exhausted. You're not making it into a holiday. But now here comes the punchline. Maimonides says, what is the general principle? He says a Ben Noach is not permitted to create any religion or to do commandments on his own from his own mind. But either he should become a full-fledged convert, or else he should remain with his system, and he shouldn't add or subtract, and he shouldn't. And then he goes on to say that he shouldn't study Torah in areas that don't apply to him, or he shouldn't create a Sabbath. And he shouldn't create anything new, okay? So, if you listen carefully to Maimonides, what does Maimonides say? What's the reason why you can't keep the Sabbath, according to Maimonides? It's not because of the Sabbath itself. The reason is because he can't create anything new. The Ben Noach is no one, no human being is allowed to create his own religion. It has to be sanctioned by God. Now, the question is, what does this have to do with Sabbath? But what if the Ben Noach says, I'm not going to create the Sabbath. I want to keep the Sabbath that is mentioned in the Torah itself. So why is that considered as creating a new religion, creating a new religious entity, like a new commandment or a new something new? Why is it that the Ben Noach can do every other commandment, and that Maimonides states clearly, that he could do every commandment except for studying Torah in areas which don't apply to him, and keeping the Sabbath. You see, because the very next law.
Rabbi, we have 60 seconds, and you're not going to get through.
I'm not going to get through this one. All right, we'll have to continue next week.
All right. We're going to be in a conference next week, but we're going to pick it up right here because we've got about 7-11 things we're going to talk about in this one.
Okay, that will be enough to keep the interest for 2 weeks, son. Okay.
Okay, well, we'll see you tomorrow evening at the airport.
That's right.
All right, good night, and thank you.
Good night.